Welcome to Season 3, Episode 13 of Swift Over Coffee. I'm Paul Hudson.
And I'm Michaela Caron.
And in this episode, we discuss our WWDC wishlist.
Being able to anchor a window to a specific point.
Oh, God, yes.
And then be able to, when it shuts off and comes back on, either go to sleep or turns off then on, being able to keep that anchor there with whatever the window was. We share, how are you making your apps ready for iOS 18?
Whether you stay in Swift 5 mode or Swift 6 mode, these changes still hit you hard. Plus,
do I do anything I say I do?
So I think last time I mentioned that I was trying to move house, and about a month has passed since then. It went very, very wrong, went absolutely nowhere for a long time, then suddenly, almost overnight, things changed. I think I'm actually now moving house.
Yeah.
And it's actually now happening. I'm really looking forward to it.
It's finally happening.
Well, we're in the stage of, getting lawyers and stuff and solicitors involved for the actual work of doing land surveys and rights and so forth and mortgages. So it's gone from nothing to everything in sort of 48 hours. And so we have our fingers and toes crossed. We're finally going to make this happen. It looks like it might actually happen while I'm at WWDC, which is just our luck, really.
Oh my gosh, that sounds a little crazy. That's also why I don't want to own a house at this moment, because that's a lot of work to own a house and buy a house.
It's true. Well, buying a house was a lot of work too. We're changing to a newer house. This current house we're in was 1895 or so it was built. And so the idea of insulation is alien to this house. The new house is 4 years old, and so it has actual insulation. So who knew? We'll see that should hopefully work out quite well for us.
You'll be living the high life then.
I know, fast internet too. I get 300 meg internet right now, which is kind of okay. But I get 1.6 gigs in the new house. So I'm very pleased with decent internet in the new house, all being well.
You get 300 megabytes or megabits per second, you're like, oh, that's kind of good. That's usually what my good internet is. My okay internet goes down to 50 and 100.
I know. I don't think our listeners realize how bad your internet is, Michaela.
It really
is. You're always moving around. You're a nomad. You're always going from city to city to city around the US, and it's never good.
Yes, and I've never found a good place for good internet either, too. So I'm like, should I just get a Starlink at this point, carry it around with me? Do you set it up outside the Airbnb or something like that? I don't know.
Well, I'll be pleased with my new internet. The current one's okay, but the new one sounds really good.
It sounds so nice.
So I'm doing that. I'm moving house right now. I believe you are ready to talk about your big app now?
I'm not ready at this moment.
No!
But I will say it's technically, I'm going to say it anyways, because by the time the podcast episode is out, that means a whole week or so has passed, which means I could then be ready.
Yeah.
For everybody, I've been working on an app. I haven't announced it because I was I don't want somebody to steal it. But then at this point, I think I can barely build it within the time frame that I have. So it's not like somebody else is going to go build it within that same time frame. But I'm releasing an app. It's called Fruitful. And it will be an app for you to connect with others when you're at conferences. You know how you'll follow each other now on Twitter, Threads, Mastodon. And then 2 weeks later, you forget everybody you followed. You forget everybody's name. You're like, who were all these people? Well, my app is going to allow you to connect with others. So it's another app to connect, but you can then tag which conference you met this person at. But I want to make it a little bit more fun, so it's not just another name in a list. And you can share your own little Pokemon card with everybody so that you can it's more fun to connect, and it's better than just a regular digital business card that just lists your name and a logo that somebody's still going to forget. It just makes it a little bit more fun to connect and actually remember who you talk to at conferences. And the goal is to release that for a conference. I'll definitely have it by WWDC that's coming in June. But what the time crunch is that I'm not sure if I'm going to make yet is by Deep Dish Swift.
Which is 3 weeks away right now. 2 weeks after release, presumably.
No, it's May.
Oh, closer than that.
Five
then.
To seven. So it's two weeks. Uh-oh. But I wanted to be done-ish by a week. So then that gives me a week to put it on the App Store.
Yep.
Because if I submit it by the Friday, who knows if it'll be there by the Sunday when the conference starts. So I'm okay, that means I have to finish it earlier than the deadline. So
We talked off air previously about this, and you were mentioning there'd be a back end somewhere, maybe in Vapor or similar.
Yes.
How far through are you actually at this point, right now?
I don't want to say because it sounds psychotic.
No.
As in, I'm building the back end with Vapor. because I wanted to also build the backend myself, which with the time crunch that I have, doesn't sound like a good idea, but I still wanted to try to do it anyways. So that's why I'm like scrambling, and I will feel sad if I like fail very publicly at this, but it still very much might happen. So, oh well. I've implemented sign in with Apple. The last thing I have to do is on the iOS side is finish the sign in with Apple part, as in keep the user logged in between sessions. So I have it like sending the token over, but it's not actually, then the iOS isn't like keeping track that like, yes, the token is still existing. Cause like, you know, you have to save it to Keychain, which I was doing. I thought it was working, figured out last time I debugged that it was not working. So that was part of the reason why the whole thing wasn't working. And I was like, why does this take so long? But then the backend, like some of the models are there and it's like only a few endpoints. So like once I actually finish that part, I think it will go quickly to build those endpoints because they're basic CRUD endpoints. So it's not going to be like terribly difficult, I think, for that specific part. But figuring out just how I want to definitely lay out the tables of connecting people together. Because if you think about this app, like in a more basic kind of sense, it is actually just a very lightweight social media. So like you can connect with people and then, but like you can connect with them and then like you're connected together, like one profile to another. So if one person unfriends you or unfollows you or whatever, it like disconnects those two profiles, but it's, I said the words wrong, but it's like, you don't follow and somebody follows you. It's just, you're directly like connected. So then like you can't continue to follow somebody after they disconnect from you is what I'm thinking.
Okay, well, it's how they're getting there, at least. It's on track for something.
It's on track for something. We will see if it's on track for Deep Dish. I hope it is. I really want it to be. This year, we have one more thing coming to WWDC. So the community is organizing a conference that will be happening alongside WWDC this year. So the One More Thing conference is being organized by Jem Ohm and some other advisors who have all hosted conferences, like the people who ran AltConf and Layers are also like advising on this. And it's going to be super exciting. It'll be one of the first, it will be, I think, the first conference that is going to happen alongside DubDub this year.
Yeah, so for folks who haven't been in the community that long, back in 2019 and earlier, DubDub was a full 5-day event from Apple. And at the same time, we'd see events such as AltConf, another 4-to-5-day event. We'd see Layers Conference, we'd see Nextdoor or similar, all taking place and other events around as well. And they all stopped during the pandemic. And then when the special event at Apple Park came by on one day at Apple Park, it's not really enough to get enough traction really from that. But Apple grew it last year to a 2-day event, Monday and Tuesday, plus Sunday Fun and Games Infinite Loop. And so now it's kind of a 3-day event of Apple's own organizing. There's enough scope now to bring back these sort of parallel events. And so they have brought a new event, called One More Thing, which is a slightly confusing name because he says One More Thing at Dub Dub and it's One More Thing separately. But it's a great name though. And it's going to be, I think, 5 days of events.
Yeah, it's going to be a whole
watch
week.
Party on Monday. Yeah, so there's lots of opportunity there to see community growth and folks who are coming to Cupertino anyway, not for the special event, didn't get a ticket perhaps, but to be in town for other great events that are happening. I'm sure you can name a few in a second. Can now go to there as well. So there's lots of things to be doing. I know that James Dempsey is doing an event on Friday there. I'm doing an event on Thursday, sorry. There's a whole bunch of stuff happening. So that should be a good thing, I think.
Yeah, and then we have iOS Dev Happy Hour, which is happening on Tuesday night. So we will officially announce it for Tuesday evening sort of time. I don't want to say the time now in case it changes from now until it's actually released. But by the time you hear this podcast, we should have announced it on our social media when the official time is. But it will be happening Tuesday night. iOS Dev Happy Hour is a bunch of people get together. We all go to whatever venue we end up booking and just chatting with others, like light snacks, having a just good time to chatting about all the things that got dropped the day before.
Oh, so it's different running from last year? Because last year it was like it was a back of a bowling alley, right? But it was like a little gaming area.
Yeah, we are looking for the venue at this moment. But it's the same thing of it'll just be a happy hour of you get people together and we'll have light snacks and just chatting with everybody that comes.
Wasn't there great pizza last year too?
Yeah, the food was actually pretty good, surprisingly. We weren't sure how it was going to go because sometimes when venues are like, you can only use our food, you can't use anybody else's food, you never know how it'll go. Like, there's kind of a reason they force you to do that. So it wasn't bad though last year. Last year was actually pretty good. So this year we're still looking for everything, getting everything together, because it's like from the time that they announce Dub Dub up until like when it happens is only like just a few months. So it's like, okay, scramble from now till then, getting a venue, because like we can ask vendors like a year ahead of time or something, but we don't ever have the actual date. And especially this year, the date is different than the past 2 years. It's happening the second week of June rather than the first week too. So like our estimates were going to be wrong anyways. So it's just like finding a venue, finding an event. And this is funny. It's like the one time we have to do a lot more planning, because normally ISDEV Happy Hour is just a monthly online meetup, which we know how to do that. We've been doing that for like last couple of years now. So, and it's the same every single month. But then now this is different because it's the one time we finally do like an in-person event. So it just has more logistics that we like don't think of or forget. So we try to like write down what everything is and remember what it all is each year.
Also, like, bonus risk, right? Because there are costs to being there, to having a venue and similar. So unlike an online one, which it can be huge or small, it's a Zoom license, presumably. Mm-hmm. This is actually, you've got to get a venue and presumably food and similar. There's cost involved and risk.
Yeah, there's a lot more cost, and that's different. So if anybody wants to sponsor ISDEV Happy Hour for our WWDC IRL in-person event, let me know. Reach out to me on any of the social medias on ISDEV Happy Hour or DM me specifically. But
do you have any sponsorship packages you can tell us more about, Michaela?
I don't want to say yet, but we do have one sponsor. Oh.
Do you have any sponsor packages?
Oh, what do you mean? Like
For $1,000, you can get, and for $500, you can get, blah, 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 and for $20,000, you can get gold plated.
Yes. I don't know if they are on the top of my head, but the link to our sponsorships page is just sponsorships.iosdevhappyhour.com. So you can go to that to then see what the tiers are that we have available for sponsors.
So that's happening. And I believe Swift Student Stars is coming back. Hopefully there'll be James Dempsey in the breakpoints. There are lots of events taking place during the week now. Honestly, even if you aren't carrying with you a special event at Apple Park ticket, there are at least five or six, maybe perhaps more things you can sign up for and meet folks. And it'll even be like the core coffee meetup that Marlon and Kai normally organize. And we'll organize usually, I think, three of them or maybe more during the week.
Yeah.
Just to get up to get with folks and chat and say, wow, did you see X, Y, and Z or whatever? And it's just great fun. It makes it so much more fun to share the excitement with other people.
Yeah. And then something else is happening before Dub Dub is the Deep Dish Swift Conference, which is happening from May 5th to 7th of this year. And you can listen to the Slices podcast that they have, which is hosted by Malin and Kai. They are interviewing all of the speakers and the sponsors that are happening at Deep Dish, which I think is super fun. You get to like kind of know some of the speakers before the conference happens, which is just different. Like, I haven't heard of any other conferences that do that. So that's really fun. And that is, yeah, coming in the next 2 weeks, though.
There's also a UK event, Swiftcraft UK, which is, it's a 4-day event, and the actual conference days on Thursday and Friday, for the first time I've seen, I think just ever, is a 4-track iOS event. Actually, Wednesday as well, tutorial day, there's 4 happening at the same time. And so it's really, really packed with a lot of knowledge, which is unusual. You'll get like sort of 20-minute, 30-minute talks, 1-track event. These are longer talks and multi-track. So it's going to be quite exciting, I think.
Yeah, that sounds super, super fun. Like with the multi-tracks and being able to like, I hope everything's recorded, because, you know, if you miss one track, one speaker, because they're happening at the same time as another speaker.
FOMO.
Yeah.
But it's not all good news, is it? Because
it was just announced recently that the Women Who Code organization is sadly shutting down. So this, if for anyone who doesn't know, Women Who Code is an organization that's been going on for the past like decade or so. And they have multiple different tracks of like, I was part of the mobile track. So iOS, Android, cross-platform. It's a whole like group specifically towards mobile. There is a cloud track, data track, and a bunch of different like location specific meetups that happened. But it's just announced though that the entire organization is sadly going to have to shut down.
This was such a surprise, such big news. I had to read their announcement twice through. Did I really, you're shutting down? What, really? And reading through the press release of the closure, you recognize this, the scale of the impact they've had over the last 13 years. 360,000 people in the community, over 1,000 volunteers, 145 countries, 20,000 events taken place, $3.5 million of scholarships, $2.5 million of conference tickets handed out, and 14,000 jobs put through them. It's just astonishing. And obviously, I'm very grateful for the extremely great impact they've had, but it's just, yeah, it bends my brain that they're closing down.
Yeah, it's, I've been to several events. Like, again, I was part of the mobile track, talked to a lot of people in there, like mainly on the iOS side, but then my local, where I'm actually from, when I'm actually home, they have a Women Who Code meetup that was there for a while. And yeah, this is sad. And on top of that, it's one of the, I think, women-specific organizations that have shut down.
Yeah, so I think James Dempsey was supporting Women Who Code previously. His dub concerts were going, the funds were going to Women Who Code. And before that, they were going to App Camp for Girls, which is to help girls get into app development, and they shut down too as well. Maybe it's a James Dempsey curse. James, you've got to spot some evil operations for a while, you know? I don't know. But it's obviously, it's very, very sad. So our theme this episode is all about WWDC. It's our wish list, and we're recording this at the sort of towards the end of April, so it'll be out in a week or so. That's like six whole weeks for Apple engineers to listen to our wishes and implement those features in iOS 18 Beta 1, right? Loads of time, right?
Yeah, it should be.
So I think we've chatted briefly about this, and I think we coalesced pretty quickly. We want to see significant Swift data improvements. I mean, I'm glad it's moving. I'm glad it's shipping. I'm glad it's replacing Core Data already, and folks are very excited about it. But I do want to see improvements there.
Yeah, it's one of the main reasons for a completely different app idea that I had that I'm deciding to not build at this moment. But it's one of the reasons why is I want to use Swift data, but then I found out Swift data is not yet compatible with the shared containers in CloudKit. So if you wanted to like have a shared list with somebody else, you cannot yet do that.
Yeah, so you get private container support. You can store your own data in iCloud, but you can't do public for everyone to read, and you can't do shared for multiple folks to edit right now. That feels, I mean, I have no idea internally, but it feels like a fairly small attainable goal, that one, right? That's a core data level change, exposing some extra API to Swift data. That feels to me one of the easier problems to solve, I'd like to think.
I think it's like famous last words. Oh, it's not too bad. It's only one small thing.
That shouldn't be too hard. In comparison, I'm looking for two changes I feel are bigger, but I still hope will land. And I'm six whole weeks, folks, come on. It's like 2 weeks per feature, right? I'd love to see an equivalent for NS Fetch Results Controller, which we use a great deal in Core Data to do MVVM support, where you can issue a query and be told when the results of that query have changed, so you can invoke an update manually or similar. Whatever they want to do in a Swifty way would be great. That's one thing, and also an NS compound predicate, because right now it's all in that hash predicate macro Swift data. It's good, but it's frustrating. There's no way of building it incrementally where you sort of maybe have a loop or some conditions then a loop. Blah, blah, blah. That kind of thing is great with compound predicates, but it's missing right now with Swift data. And that's a problem because I love making complex predicates that do exactly what I want rather than have to filter in Swift, you know, do a big fetch of 1,000 objects and get down to the last 10 with filtering in Swift code. Give me the whole thing in a predicate, please.
And then another thing I think I'm looking forward to, which sounds rumored, I hope then it lands, is Xcode with Copilot or with some kind of AI in Xcode so that they can do better auto completion, maybe.
So I did appear, I think Mark Gurman on Bloomberg did say it was the weirdest thing seeing Xcode leaks in the story on the news, natural regular people news. But he sets up my Xcode AI on there. I've got no idea what's coming up, obviously. We'll see it in 2 months or so. But I do know that obviously Apple would love to get into the AI space. Everyone would at this point. It's hot for every major tech company at this point. I know that Jaws's dub tweet actually used Cap A and Cap I in the tweet to make it really clear that AI is a thing in WWDC. Mm-hmm. It's appeared in various Tim Cook quotes. It appeared in the M3 MacBook Air, I think, messaging there around AI, best laptop for AI. They're pushing it very hard. They're sort of trailing it very hard already. what actually lands, I don't know. But fundamentally, AI, large language models, have to be trained on material. And does Apple have enough material to train on? That would be the interesting thing. Because right now, the documentation is not necessarily considered the best in the world.
Not good training
and
material.
And if they're using that for training, right, if they're using that for training, it's a bit of an issue. You know, when you have something great, you have got a really great, solid, you know, billions of books in the English language, whatever, like, great material. You can read that all and ingest it and produce stuff. But if you've got a shaky foundation, building AI on a shaky foundation isn't necessarily going to make it better. You can't just sprinkle AI on things and make it better. It takes a strong foundation to make things better.
It doesn't
better.
Work like that? And so, just can't sprinkle AI everywhere? It doesn't, yeah,
I know.
It just magically gets
I know,
better?
It's magic. So we'll see. But they wouldn't do it unless they were sure. That's definitely an Apple thing. They always wait 1, 2, 3 years for other folks to kind of klutz around and make mistakes. And then they watch them quietly, watch them carefully, learn from their mistakes, and then do their bigger, better thing is usually how it works. Hopefully that happens here too.
Yeah, because if I feel like with this specific thing, because so many other IDEs have Copilot or ChatGPT or whatever backed LLM in it, then if it just like sucked really bad on Xcode, we'd all be really sad about it too. So I feel like it has to like be functional and really working too for them to make it a feature that works. Because also if it's baked into Xcode, I wonder if you can then like turn it on or off whenever you want to do something then too.
So I was at the Apple Developer Academy in Naples 2 days ago, and it was interesting. They were asking me questions like, you know, do I worry that GPT will kill our jobs? And I don't worry at all. You know, tapping out the exact typing keys of the code you want to write was always the least interesting part of the job. Structuring things out, finding solutions to problems is the bigger thing that humans are great at and GPT's terrible at. And, you know, if Xcode AI or whatever they end up landing on name-wise can do that for us, the actual typing part out partly, I'd be happy to see that. But you know what I will be happy to see, and actually I'll be angry if I don't see, is some kind of web view for SwiftUI. Because we're now in SwiftUI 4, SwiftUI 5 is coming real soon now. It's our fifth year of SwiftUI. There needs to be some kind of WebKit integration for SwiftUI, whether that's a Safari view controller for showing, you know, the standard UI or embeddable WK WebView style blocks of web content. I don't really mind how it's done. Do both. Even better. Just do both, Apple. You've got 6 weeks here. Come on, get to work. but yeah, it's frustrating. And I told them last year to their face, this is a real problem. And I've been filing radars for years now. It's a problem. And it's a shortage. And the fact that you cannot embed web content in your apps easily is a weird gap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... No matter how much we like iOS dev being like all native and everything, like sometimes you need to have a web view for something.
Yeah.
And the fact that we can't do it easily in SwiftUI either is weird because it's literally not possible.
Yeah. If you're a previewer and a Mastodon poster writing the thing, you can obviously exit your whole app and take them off to Safari, or you can just say, here you go, here's right in your app. It's extremely common. Oh, well.
And then on the Vision OS side, because we haven't talked about that yet, is I'm so interested to see if we will get a Vision OS 2.0 or if it's like a 1. Something. I don't know.
Nah,
because
2.0.
It's like we only really have, we only had Vision OS though 1.0 for like 4 months between February to June.
Right. But it didn't change that much externally. Obviously, internally evolved a lot in the June through February timeframe, but externally, not a lot changed. It's got to last until next September, remember, right?
Mm-hmm.
They won't do a 2.0 in like March.
Yeah.
They won't. They'll do a dub, and which means if VisionOS 2 does not ship this year, it will ship September 2025. And I don't think they can afford to wait that long, like 18 months from now, for a next major revision to the public of VisionOS. That's huge.
That's true. That's a good point. You just have to do the math.
But version numbers aside, what would you actually like to see, though? What would you change? We've been using it now for a few months.
I think the biggest thing people are really looking for is like camera access to the outside camera on the Vision Pro, because we know they have it because that's how they make the personas. So it's there. We just yet do not have access to be able to see the rest of the world.
We know they have that because you can see it through the eye. I think, can't you? Because what you're seeing is the camera output from the cameras, right? So it's clearly there. They're very worried about privacy, and I get it. And by doing this kind of baby steps approach, do a little bit, do a little bit, do a little bit, they're avoiding some massive, oh no, we've gone too far.
Mm-hmm.
We now got to break apps to reel them back in again. They would not want to do that. And so I think you might be disappointed. I think it's probably too early to say at this point it's safe to give us dangerous developers camera access.
I think then one of the other things I know a lot of people complained about at the beginning too was being able to anchor a window to a specific point.
Oh God, yes.
And then be able to, when it shuts off and comes back on, either go to sleep or turns off then on, being able to keep that anchor there with whatever the window was.
Just automatically. I don't care. I don't want to do window restoration manually. So right now, folks, you generally speaking don't quit apps on VisionOS. It's like iOS, right? They'll run in the background happily forever in theory. In practice, if you actually run out of battery power on your Vision Pro, or if it's booted from memory because of low memory pressure, then it'll relaunch when you tap press again. It'll restore your windows if you're lucky, or you do it manually, but it'll put them in the middle of the screen, which is very, very annoying. And I get why they're doing it, because if you press and hold the home button at any point, the digital crown button at any point, it does re-center every window in front of you, right? Which is kind of what you want most of the time. But for some apps, you know, widget-based apps and similar, you want to put them around your house. Like, you know, put this one, stack that to the refrigerator, stack that to the front door, stack that to whatever it is, so you don't forget key things. And you can't do that. It's really frustrating. But there's more, I think, is possible from VisionOS. And this is not actually adding things to VisionOS. It's kind of moving it across. Because they made a whole bunch of changes to common APIs in VisionOS. Like, as you'll know, the particle emitting component for RealityKit, which you built your app on, which is lovely, is currently VisionOS only.
Oh, yeah.
And the new hand-tracking APIs, which is a huge light-year difference from the old Vision framework hand-tracking APIs. They're still pretty not great, but they're way better than what they were. I'd love to see them come to iOS as well. So those two things coming to iOS would be great. And it feels weird, like, why do you want hand-tracking in iOS? Because you're kind of holding it, you know, wave your hands in front of your own phone. But you could at least film someone else doing stuff, couldn't you? And playing golf or you know, tennis or basketball, any hand-related kind of things, there's bunches of ways that could be used. Well, didn't you release a framework? What you planned for is a framework for hand-tracking in VisionOS.
Yes, you reminded me that I still haven't done that either. Oh. Do I do anything I say I do?
What you don't know, listeners, right now is right now she's not hard at work at all. She's currently, I believe, in Canada somewhere, snowboarding. Is that right?
Yeah, I looked at my schedule today and I was like, okay, I have to record Swift Over Coffee this morning, and we record pretending I'm on Eastern time rather than actually I'm in Pacific. And I was like, okay, I have a meeting now. I have a meeting in like 2 hours. Then I'm done. I don't have another meeting until the end of the day. So that really gives me the whole day to go snowboarding.
Yeah.
And this is the last day I'm here, so I'm going to. It's all I'm going to. And then, because I had things to do, but then I was like, well, it's the last day, so I'm going to go snowboarding. Maybe that's why my app's not done, is because I keep going snowboarding. But
only yourself to blame.
Yeah, I'm going to go snowboarding. But I do have a package to release for hand tracking. Maybe I'll release it then. Between the time we record this until we release it, I can release this package, because the code is all there. I just, like, it's not documented at all. So, like, if you tried to use it, you would be like, I don't really know how to use it. But also, it's super basic right now. It's literally just, like, a class with, like, one function in it. And you just pass stuff to this function. So it's not, like, crazy. But it's, I want to add something. So, like, when you look at the package, it says more than, right now it's just called hands, like, in all caps. Which, hang on, I want to figure out what I actually said, what that stands for.
Oh, it stands for something.
It stands for something. It's hands in all caps, and it has its own abbreviation.
I was trying to explain to my kids, and this is something for the older listeners to our group, that it was very common in my age group when you were a kid to watch cartoons where all the groups had names or acronyms, something else. The most popular one being a cartoon called MASK, which was somehow short for Mobile Armored Strike Command, like command with a K. Folks, if you're listening, you love MASK, leave a review.
Yes, we named ours Hands, all caps. So it's the Hand Analysis and Detection System.
Hand Analysis and Detection. Okay, yeah. Well, release it. Otherwise, I'll release my version of the same thing.
Well, that's rude.
I know.
Our open ballot this episode is, how are you making your apps ready for iOS 18? And so we got a couple less responses on this one than we normally get. So does that mean nobody's preparing and we just wait to see what happens? I mean, that's what I do sometimes.
Or everyone's trying to fix their app up for iOS 16 because the rate of change is so high.
Yeah, it comes around quick every year. So let's start it off with Connor says that he's trying to get his apps updated with all the fixes and features he wants so that he feels like he's in a place to embrace all of the new iOS 18 features.
This is the same approach I take with my own writing. So I've released an update in the last 2 weeks for hacking with iOS and hacking with macOS and hacking with watchOS and just clearing the decks basically of all my to-do lists, get it clear. So when the horror of 18 finally hits, all the changes they've made, I'm like, okay, I'm ready for this. I'm braced for this. And that way I'm not panicking about not doing other things that have been hanging around for a long time.
That's always a really good approach. But then something that's happening specifically with this year, Dan O'Leary mentions how, if he's not mistaken, Swift 6 will be released this year during WWDC. And he's been reading a lot about concurrency lately in preparation for this. So he's checked all of his apps with the warning by enabling strict concurrency checking in Xcode to see how many hurdles he'll have to soon jump through. And then Roma Herman also mentions enabling the concurrency checking and still getting all of those warnings settled now because Swift 6 has a lot of concurrency changes that are coming. So this is then Swift 6. We know because Swift is open source. You can always go look at this too. Swift 6 has a bunch of concurrency stuff that is coming. So by starting off enabling the build settings, that's a good way to indicate, like, have you really written your code very well for all the concurrency things? And then seeing what we have to do between that with async await. And I'm not sure what it all entails, but I just know stuff is coming. But Holly Borla did put out a post that it's not going to be as scary as people are saying. We'll find a link for that, but she's like, it's not going to be super crazy.
Yeah. So what she was trying to say, if we're referring to the same link, is that when they ship Swift 6, there will be a Swift 5 compatibility mode baked into it.
Mm.
And so if you're sitting there thinking, oh, wow, no, this puts my code completely on fire, you can back down a notch, go back to Swift 5 mode, and migrate slowly. Now, what Dan and Roma are both speaking about is the concurrency option you can change in your build settings in Swift 5.10. Actually, in earlier versions too, but 5.10 is the one you'll target. It's modern Xcode, 15.3 or so. And it more or less gives you the concurrency changes in Swift 6. Not all of them, but the majority of the serious ones that affect most of us are there in that version. And so when it's warning you, oh, this shouldn't work anymore, this is going to break in the future, it will say, this is a warning, it will change to an error in Swift 6. So it gives you a chance to adapt now. Your code won't break currently. You've got, 6 months or Swift 6 ships as final to make that warning go away. Otherwise, it will start breaking your builds. And so it's a helpful way to get ahead of the game. What it won't do, and this is a problem I face fairly frequently, is that, Swift generally is okay at handing out deprecation warnings for UIKit or Swift UI stuff. What they don't do very effectively, and you can't really do, is tell you, actually, there's a better way of doing that now. For example, it was quite common if you had a Swift 5.9 piece of code with a Swift UI button, and you want to have like button, my title, action, some method name. And it would say, oh no, you can't do that because you're calling a main actor thing here, and you can't do that, warning, bad idea. And it was always fine because buttons are always main actor. That's what they're on the main actor by default, the SwiftUI stuff. But it was throwing up an error, a warning every time. And so you'd basically make a little closure that would call the function. And that was fine. And that was fixed in 5.10. That now goes away completely. So you can remove that extra hassle from your code. It's much nicer. So it can't tell you to do that. It can't tell you to make your code better, but it can at least tell you to fix the race conditions that are in there right now. So yeah, if you can, folks, do enable that option. Get ahead of the game. It is coming. Whether you stay in Swift 5 mode or Swift 6 mode, these changes still hit you hard. And so please do get on the board now.
Okay, that sounds like one of the big then steps for actually preparing is probably start with that. And then Joshua Root mentions also instead, he's delaying the submission of his app to make sure that it runs natively on Vision Pro as opposed to in compatibility mode too.
Yeah, compatibility mode, it is about the same level of ick as you have running an iPhone app in iPad mode. You know, that's what it's like. It's like, hey, everything's bright white on my eyes. Am I too old to say ick? Anyway, it's like this whole screen looks like an iPad floating in front of me. It's, you know, everything's bright white. It's not a pleasant experience. And so it doesn't take a great deal to get out of that compatibility mode and get into a native Vision OS app. And then how far you want to go with it, you know, making it better and better and better, you can do. But just getting it off that sort of like first gear to so it looks like a native Vision Pro app is a big, big difference.
Maybe that can be added to our DubDub wish list, which is be able to change the mode for all the compatibility mode apps. Change them from light mode to dark mode because they default it to light mode.
They do.
And you can't change it off. So it and it's white. So yeah, like in the Vision Pro, it's just very bright. If those could just like change dark mode, that'd be great.
6 weeks, Michaela. It's hard work, that one. They must have thought about it, though. They must have thought ahead of time. Here's in white light mode, here's in dark mode. They've made that choice consciously, presumably. Well, not presumably, they definitely have.
Next, Jihut Gundas mentions that zero warnings is a good start, I guess, which I agree. Zero warnings is always a good start because then when you are going from one version to the next or just in your code or like merging code from somebody else too, you can see if somebody added a warning. When you have no warnings, you can then see when somebody comes in with one warning. But if you have like 10, 15, 30, 100 warnings, you don't see when any new ones get added. So definitely like clearing out warnings is a good start.
Yes. Most projects these days have zero warnings, I think. That's their goal. For good reason, because not so much in Swift, but it used to be the case that warnings and errors were interchangeable in Objective-C. Like some things that were warnings were really actually errors in Objective-C. It wouldn't tell you that. I think I mentioned before that the biggest one I hit in my career, we had a warning Back in the day, when I was a lad doing Objective-C, you'd use selectors everywhere, and they were pretty poorly string-based selectors. And you'd say, I want to run this method name on this thing, and it just run it for you, right? And the problem we had was we used rest of world, R-O-W, in a method name. And it was saying, blah, 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 row, doesn't exist. And we saw R-O-W with a lowercase w, different selector name, different method name being run. And we didn't realize that was actually a very serious problem, that we typed row with a lowercase w run, row with a capital W, rest of the world. And it caused actual crashing. It was great. And so since then, I've been on a massive pilgrimage to destroy every possible instance of warnings where possible, even down to Swift lint warnings. I get them all fixed where possible.
That's a good idea. I should put Swift lint into my package that I have too, because that's also not there.
This is the hands package.
Yeah. I don't know if you can hear my stomach. I'm going to eat food because I realize apparently I'm actually very hungry.
Oh, eating the podcast. That.
It sounds loud to me.
Yeah, definitely hear that. No pressure. We can sit and wait for you eating. It's fine.
Please hold.
Chris, do not edit this bit out. Leave all the chomping sounds in.
Rafal Kobolinski mentions trying to accelerate the release of a public beta before the avalanche of new stuff hits them.
Which is a good idea. I think it's interesting how the time pressure does sometimes make us get things done, if that makes sense. Like, often I'll do nothing unless there's time pressure attached to it. If it's due in 2 weeks, I'll do nothing. Due tomorrow, I'll work very, very hard.
Yeah.
Which is a stupid way of working for me, at least. I'm not saying Rafael's like that, but I certainly
that kind of sounds like what I have been doing as well with my own app. And then now it's like, oh, I wanted to finish this by Deep Dish. That's coming in 2 weeks. But because I have so much to do, I am finishing it in 2 weeks. But I actually bought the domain for this in June last year.
So much optimism. I love it.
So because I bought the domain in June of last year, I had all these plans to do this and then did it. So getting ahead of it and making also the public beta, though, is a good idea because you can then have other people testing it. And then some people who are in your user group probably will end up going on the beta as well for like not just public beta of your app, but going on the iOS beta, too. So then you can find bugs through people who go on to the iOS 18 beta. Vila Moss mentions that they're hoping to see a ChatGPT-like functionality running locally on iPhone, so building the UI in mind for this feature. But then in case of no Apple-based AI, they're going to implement a server-side API instead. And I think I've tried to do this too with some things. It's like you know a feature you really want is coming, so it's like, okay, if Apple gives it to us, then you can bake it in first party, but then if not, you can just fall back on some other third-party API.
Yeah, I think at this point, given all the rumors and Joz's very clear sort of initialisms and stuff, it's happening. We don't know what's happening, but something AI is happening. And historically, folks, it's always been a good bet to bet on whatever is the new shiny Apple thing. The Apple App Store editorial team, just love featuring iOS XX apps, whatever it is, iOS 17, now 18, whatever it is, 19. They love featuring on new apps that have new API usage in there, showing new cool Apple things, because you're basically highlighting their new stuff as well. So it's a great idea to get yourself very quickly featured by finding a good idea to twist on, presumably, the rumor is local AI. I don't know how it'll work, but there's been Apple papers around fast, efficient AI processing on local devices for maximum privacy, you know, which is a great, if they can pull it off, it'd be really, really nice. That'd be a killer USP for them.
Yeah, and that's something I want to do this year for, I think I've actually said this every year for the past like 3 years, so maybe this year will be the year, is I really want to make an app that with whatever brand new thing that gets released and make an app centered around that idea, I think would be super, super fun. You know, this year hopefully is the year because I, you know, don't have a job and I'm an indie dev, so maybe I'll have the time now. Next up, Ricky Witherspoon mentions how he just started the iOS 15 deprecation process at his company, so you can focus on all the iOS 18 support this summer.
Which also means, Ricky, you can finally have the new iOS 16 navigation API, Swift UI, which are very nice indeed. And so I know a lot of folks will be going back and watching old dub videos saying, I can finally do this thing now from 22 or 23, which is as important as, you know, watching the 24 stuff.
Yeah, I think we tend to forget sometimes. It's when we add new things and new things come out, other things slowly get deprecated as well. And then that means you can also take things out of your code base, which is so much fun just deleting lines and lines of code.
I mean, it's been great that me doing 3 book updates back to back in 2 to 3 weeks has been wonderful. I'm like, wow, this whole paragraph can go, that can go. That's not a bug anymore. There's now this one line instead. And I for like adding the share link API rather than doing it by hand, I've just moved across to the draggable API because it was a bit buggy in macOS. Ooh, macOS 13. What was macOS 13? Monterey? No, I've lost track these days. Before Sonoma. Yeah. Before Sonoma, but it was buggy in 13, it's fixed in 14, so...
Ventura,
there you go. Ventura. There's too many these days. So yeah, it's great fun deleting old stuff. There's now that worked correctly. Who knew? It's great.
Lastly then, Benjamin Fondenhoot says, trying like mad to catch up with iOS 17 features first.
So that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening. As always, please leave a review and tell your friends how great we are. Our next open ballot is this. Is Swift Evolution working? Is it going in the right direction? Do you follow along? Do you discuss the features there somehow? We'd love to know more. Until next time, folks, take care.
See ya.
For $1,000, you can get... and for $500, you can get... Blah, 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 blah.
Well, that's rude.